Thank you for visiting HawkeyeJive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our sixth edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeJive.com. Hope everyone found a way to enjoy the bye weekend that Iowa had, or the bye week, I should say. Obviously, the Hawkeyes didn't play, but Big Ten play did open up. And honestly, I wasn't all that impressed with what I saw from the conference in general. I don't think it was that great of a week for the Big Ten. You did have one good game, Illinois coming back from 28-10 down to beat Northwestern 38-35. But, I mean, even that, you had ugly incident in that game with Jonathan Brown, Illinois defensive lineman. He's now actually suspended for that game against Indiana. But just quickly going through the Big Ten in general, just to give you an idea of where Iowa's sitting at the moment. You look at, well, I guess I'll start the leaders division here. Illinois, Penn State, and Wisconsin all won. They're all 1-0. Purdue played Notre Dame over the weekend, but so that wasn't a conference. Their conference opener is against Minnesota Saturday. So they're still at 0-0. And then the two teams in the basement at the moment, one game in, are Ohio State and Indiana. Meanwhile, Iowa's division, this is where it gets interesting. Nebraska and Northwestern lost. So their respective games. So that should be beneficial to Iowa in some degree. They got a leg up on those teams, as well as Minnesota. Michigan and Michigan State at the moment are a half game ahead. Michigan State doesn't play this week, so they're still going to be 1-0. Michigan plays Northwestern. So right now, there's a distinct possibility that by the end of Saturday, by the end of Saturday evening, you could be looking at a few scenarios. You could be looking at Iowa in a tie for first place with Michigan State, should Michigan be upset by Northwestern. You could be looking at Iowa being in a tie for second with Michigan State, meaning a half game behind Michigan, should Michigan prevail. You could be looking at Iowa being 0-1 and, I mean, really right down there with Minnesota, maybe Northwestern, you know. Nebraska plays Ohio State this week. I guess they could lose that game. But right now, this is a critical week. Now that the Hawkeyes kind of know where they stand after 1 week, they shift into Big Ten play now and open up against Penn State. And really, I think this is a big game for both teams. I'll start quickly with Iowa's perspective here. Obviously, it's a Big Ten opener. They're coming off a bye week. Historically, Iowa hasn't done well coming off bye weeks under Kirk Ferentz. The record's 3-5. Last year was one of the three wins that Iowa got. It was over Michigan. But even that game, if you recall, Michigan jumped out to a 7-0 lead, and Iowa had issues moving the ball early on. It wasn't until probably around the second quarter where they just started going all out. And before you know it, Ricky Stanzi was completing every pass. Adam Robinson was making big plays. Darrell Johnson Koulianos was making big plays. And Iowa was able to build up a lead that, even though Michigan put up 21 points in the fourth quarter, it just was too big for the Wolverines to overcome. And then the other two victories Iowa's had coming off bye weeks, you have to go back to 2004 when they beat Ohio State. That's a game I'm sure many of you Iowa fans out there recall and have fond memories of. And then the other is in 2001. Actually, this is still off a bye week. They beat Penn State in their opener in 2001. But it was actually Iowa's first game in 3 weeks, because if you obviously – the game against Iowa State that was supposed to be played in September got moved back to the end of the season because of the circumstances on 9/11. And obviously, every college football game that weekend was postponed, rightfully so. But now you're looking at this week. This is actually the third year in a row Iowa's opening up Big Ten play against Penn State, which is kind of fascinating to me. As you recall, last season, Iowa had its homecoming against Penn State and absolutely clobbered the Nittany Lions. That game, even though the 24-3, I don't really think is as indicative of just how bad Iowa beat up on Penn State that night. Penn State just struggled. They had one instance where they got near the goal line, and of course, Iowa got a goal line stand. I still remember Christian Ballard coming up with that big play on fourth down, keep Penn State out of the end zone. And really, from that point on, they just couldn't move the ball. And it's interesting to point out, too, that Rob Bolden was the quarterback for Penn State that evening. His stats that week were 20 of 37 for 212 yards. He did throw one interception. That was actually the pick six by Sean Prater that sealed it. Actually, it's kind of interesting. Sean Prater has had an interception against Penn State each of the last 2 years. He also had one in that 09 game. Not as much buildup this year as there's been in years past, for obvious reasons. Even though Iowa comes in 3-1, Penn State comes in 4-1. Neither team, I mean, they've both really kind of gotten off to slow starts. I mean, Iowa seems to have picked it up, but again, they're coming off a bye week. And you got to wonder, okay, how's this team going to come out of the gate on Saturday? Especially in that environment. And I could tell you from being there 2 years ago, Beaver Stadium, is when that place is packed, it's as crazy a college football atmosphere as you're going to find. If any Iowa fans out there that are making the trip to go see the game on Saturday, trust me, you will enjoy yourself. It's State College is one of the nicer Big Ten campuses, or nicest, I should say, Big Ten campuses that there is, at least in my opinion. In Beaver Stadium, again, great atmosphere. Penn State, a lot of questions right now regarding the quarterback situation. Is it going to be Bolden? Is it going to be McGloin? I'll tell you what. Mainly because of that, I still kind of have a hard time coming up with a solid opinion as to what to expect on Saturday. Because on one hand, I could see Iowa, you know, dominating this game from the get-go, kind of like they did last year. It's obviously not going to be easy because you're playing this game in State College, and Penn State is 4-1. You know, Penn State, I will say this about Penn State. The Nittany Lions have come in to this game knowing that, okay, they're exactly where pretty much everyone, including myself, thought they would be at this point. Their one loss is to Alabama, which, you know what? A lot of teams are going to lose to Alabama this season. The Crimson Tide have maybe the best defense in the country. It's either them or LSU. Otherwise, I mean, Penn State's beaten who they're supposed to beat. Now, have their wins been impressive? Not necessarily. That game last week against Indiana, that was one of the uglier football games I've watched. But they're 4-1. Now, personally, I will say that if I was picking quarterbacks for them, I would say Matt McGloin has probably been the more impressive of the two. And I've come around on that opinion because coming into this season, I thought Rob Bolden would be the guy. I thought there was more upside with Rob Bolden, but clearly his numbers compared to McGloin's, McGloin's been better. And I know McGloin struggled big time against Alabama, but he's bounced back. I think he's earned that job, but whether or not he actually starts on Saturday remains to be seen. I have a feeling we're going to probably see both quarterbacks out there for Penn State. But who knows? Maybe McGloin does play the entire game. Maybe Bolden plays the entire game. Probably not going to know until Saturday. And that's really what kind of makes this game unpredictable in a sense. You just don't know. You don't know what you're going to expect from Penn State. So, I mean, how's it going to play out? Is it going to be one of those games where they jump out and Iowa has to find a way to come back like it did in 2009? Is this going to be one of those games where Iowa, you know, comes out with a no-huddle like it did against ULM? Gets the passing game going early. And Penn State is decimated on defense injuries right now. DeAnton Lynn, their corner, probably not expected to play. He's suffered a concussion a few weeks ago. They lost their best player, Michael Mowdy, at least on the defensive side of the ball. They lost one of their best players, Michael Mowdy. He's a linebacker, tore his ACL against Eastern Michigan, done for the season. Huge loss for their team. They already had lost Pete Massaro, their defensive end, back in spring ball. A season-ending injury. They do have one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best defensive linemen in the Big Ten, Devin Still. Iowa's going to have to be aware of where he is at all times, and you know, make sure you get bodies on him, because if he has his way, Iowa's going to struggle running the football. That I can tell you. But, you know, this is a big game for Iowa. Conversely, this is a huge game for Penn State. If you look at their schedule, they play Purdue next week. That should be a win regardless. But then the last five games, they have Northwestern on the road. Then Illinois comes to Beaver Stadium. Illinois beat them by 20 points last year. Then after the bye week, they have in the beginning of November, Penn State plays its final home game of the season, November 12th against Nebraska. And then they end the season with consecutive road games against Ohio State, a team that they've only won one game against in the horseshoe, at least if my memory serves correct, since they joined the Big Ten in 1993. Maybe there's two, but I'm only one I know of for sure was 2008. And then they end the regular season at Wisconsin. That's their last game, the final weekend in November. From Penn State's vantage point, this is one of those games that could be the difference between them winning eight or nine games this season and going to, like, the Insight Bowl and finishing 6-6 or even worse yet, 5-7 and either barely being able to qualify for a bowl game or not even being bowl eligible. So there's a lot at stake for the Nittany Lions on Saturday as well. Again, this is a key game for both teams. And you look at Iowa's schedule, they win this game, they have to feel pretty good about themselves. And you consider the next three opponents, Northwestern comes to Kinnick Stadium, the Indiana comes to Kinnick Stadium, and then they end the month of October with a trip to Minnesota. And, I mean, all three of those teams lost last weekend, so it's not like any of them are world beaters. I know Iowa's had issues against some of those teams in recent years, but it's not like it's not as if they are unbeatable. They're very beatable teams. So, you know, if Iowa's able to get out of this game with a victory, this could end up setting up to be a nice season for Iowa after all. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, but decent podcast for you here this week, if I do say so myself. Chris Rowell will join me here in the next segment once again, or I should say our last segment. There's only two. It's this and then our segment with Chris. We also have the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em. We're going to discuss those games again. If you'd like to participate in this week's Pick'em, just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Just hover over that. You'll see the Pick'em page. Click there. Have a list of 10 games right there at your disposal. And then submit your picks at HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score or your Iowa-Penn State prediction. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers that may come about. I want to congratulate last week's winner, Bud Denny, someone that actually lives out in Washington State. So we got people from all over the country taking part in the Pick'em. He went 8-2. He was the only person that went 8-2. Actually beat out my dad. My dad went 7-3 in the Pick'em. I got his email. But, Bud, if you're listening to this, congratulations. We have the prize coming out your way out there on the West Coast. And when we come back, Chris Rowell will join me to discuss more about Iowa-Penn State as well as the Pick'em games. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles, once again joined this week by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. Chris, interesting weekend of games here considering Iowa wasn't playing.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was some actually good games, a lot of upsets. Upset weekend. Hopefully it's another one sometime this season. But at the same time, one team that's surprising me right now is Clemson. I didn't did 3 weeks in a row. I don't know what's going on, man.
Yeah, they've made us both look foolish 3 weeks in a row. But we don't have them on the Pick'em this week, so no worries. But I'll just start off here by asking you, now that Iowa's approached the Big Ten part of the season here, opening up conference play Saturday against Penn State, how much does the intensity change in practice now that you're at this point in the season where you're suddenly the eyes on the prize? It's no longer one of those situations where, okay, you're just getting ready to play Louisiana Monroe or Tennessee Tech. You're getting ready to play a team that's familiar with you. You're familiar with their guys. and it's a game that really, like, counts for something?
Well, with preparation and intensity of practice with Big Ten plays, we're just trying to get better, go upon our strengths, find out where our weakness. Coming off a bye week, I'm sure they went pretty hard. This week, they taper back just a little bit from the last week with the younger guys. Now it's just, hey, man, we got an eye on our prize. And also the Big Ten Conference right here is on the line now from on. Also, I was getting ready to say is that Coach Ferentz just tried to take an approach where, hey, we know these guys, they know us, we got to find our strengths and apply them to their weaknesses and so on, and also sit here and better our weaknesses here with the Iowa Hawks. But I think for the most part, now it's the middle of the season, it's just, you know, just grinding it out now. Coach probably has started tapering back a couple minutes from practice or whatnot, just trying to get some good work in instead of sitting here being here out there probably 2-3 hours a day in practice.
Now, Iowa has played one road game this season, but it was Iowa State, and that's obviously a game you just take a bus out to Ames, no big deal. With this being a game out in Pennsylvania, and for some of these younger guys, they have 10 true freshmen that have already played this season. This is going to be their first experience actually flying out somewhere with the team to a game. Just how would you, when you think back to when you played, what were some of those experiences like when you're actually like on a team plane, getting ready to play a road game, and you know you have that time on the flight and you have time when you get to your destination to sit through? Just like, what would a typical Thursday, Friday be like, a week of a road game?
Well, Thursday is just, you know, walk through practices, just trying to taper things up, letting loose, just trying to improve on what you had did all week long, just sitting there, just trying to make sure everything goes right. But on Friday, experience for me, my first plane ticket, I mean, my first plane ride somewhere, I forgot where it was, but I know I was in between Matt Kroll and Mitch Green, which was kind of crazy. I'm just this little skinny guy right here sitting between two big defensive linemen. But for the most part, usually the underclassmen probably just go in, keep their mouths closed, and just follow the lead. That's the biggest thing, and that's what I did. And I'm glad I was being able to sit next to Mitch King and Matt Kroll, just to sit there and just throw my headphones on and just not say anything at all. But it's one of those deals you just got to watch and learn on the road. It's because, I mean, you can get overwhelmed at times, but at the same time, you got to keep your focus on the game or whatnot. Usually Coach Ferentz try to keep things structured. And, yes, we have a little free time before meetings or whatnot, depending on what time we leave. Usually it's early in the morning. So the little downtime that you usually have in the hotel rooms is usually you talking to your roommate or a couple other teammates in a room watching TV or whatnot, playing some games, card games or so. Just you know, casually sitting back, not doing nothing too rowdy. Just it's one of the things that Coach Ferentz put upon us. It's just that we just try to bond it during those times, just because we know we can't go out and venture out or whatnot, just like other teams probably would do. But I think it's, for the most part, just trying to stay focused.
Now, there was one situation that took place over the weekend. I'm sure you heard about it by now, with A.J. Derby, redshirt freshman quarterback, ended up getting arrested Saturday night, had facing multiple charges. I won't dive into too much of that, but what I want to ask you, when you had experiences where teammates would get in trouble with the law in some way, shape, or form, how would you handle that? And just what seemed to be kind of the mood as you watch a teammate kind of go through the punishments? Ferentz said right now Derby's suspended 2 games and he's still going to be able to practice with the team, but you can't really, obviously probably not going to be traveling out to Penn State Saturday and not going to be able to suit up with the team. Just how do you handle that, like, during practices and during that time when a player serving a punishment?
Well, with guys that serving punishments, the biggest thing as a teammate I would do personally, and I'm sure any other teammate would do, is sit there and be there for them. You know, just tell them, hey, man, I got your back. We know you did the wrong thing or whatnot, but, you know, just let's try to move forward from here. And we know and we see some of the punishment that goes on. Either it's a in-house type of deal, and also suspensions. Yes, it's brutal, but at the same time, when you make a bad decision, you have to pay for it. He will have his guys there for him. It's just that he now needs to sit here and prove to the team that he's sorry about what happened. And 2 games is kind of stiff, but at the same time, you gotta sit there and do your punishment. But he should be all right.
And just how do you feel this could impact the depth at quarterback going forward? Because now John Winkie is the backup to James Vandenberg, and it's one of those situations where you don't want it to happen, obviously. But if something does happen to Vandenberg, suddenly Winkie's coming in. He hasn't had – the only game experience he's had is holding on, like, PATs and field goals. He hasn't taken any snaps. Derby's been the one that's been getting all those number two reps. How does that possibly affect things, at least in the immediate future?
Well, what I say is that Derby really haven't had more snaps than John Winkie has. You might just see him play a couple plays here and there this year, but you know, let's not forget that Derby did redshirt last year. John Winkie has been in the program three or four years or whatnot. So John Winkie is not it's not really much of a step back. You know, maybe the guy's skill set is a little bit different, but the biggest thing is that John Winkie knows the system. He knows what he's doing. He's well prepared. So I don't think it's a scare or anything there. Yes, just because people haven't seen him play, and a lot of people sit there and throw a red flag or whatnot, but John Winkie should be ready. Just like James, when Rick went down, people sit there and hold a lot of concern, but the guys would be all right. Just keep faith in them, and they'll be all right. It's not a huge concern, I don't think.
Now, moving ahead here to Saturday's game between Iowa and Penn State, I would imagine you got to see a little bit, maybe not the entire game, but a little bit of what Penn State's been able to do this season, last Saturday in particular against Indiana. What are some of your observations from what you have been able to gather on the Nittany Lions, and I guess in particular with their quarterback situation?
Well, the biggest thing with Penn State, I haven't watched much, but I watched a little bit of last week's game. It looks terrible, and I seen you were tweeting a lot about it, how bad it was.
It was painful to watch. I found myself flipping back to Northwestern Illinois quite frequently during that.
Well, the biggest thing is just that I figure that Penn State and Iowa's in the same boat right now. Penn State might just be a little bit ahead of Iowa with the whole process of getting back to a Big Ten championship contender or whatnot. I see both teams in the middle of the road, especially with Penn State losing a couple guys and the quarterback situation is all over the place. And you know, now they're getting Stephon Green back, which would be a huge impact for them guys if he's able to play this week because he's a big bruiser. I played against the guy. I tackled him once, and it's not fun. He's a big guy. But I figure that Penn State is going to give those guys a good blow.
And just you mentioned that aspect of it and how they're kind of in the middle and with the quarterback situation, particularly Rob Bowlin and Matt McGloin. I know you went through a somewhat similar experience your junior year when there's a battle between Jake Christensen and Ricky Stanzi. Ultimately, you guys did settle on Stanzi and were able to win 9 games that year. But at that point in time when that was playing out, just what's the locker room? How would you describe that when you do have a battle? And there's probably it's a situation where there's clearly some guys are clearly with one player and some are clearly with the other.
It's kind of hard to sit here and try to diagnose a quarterback left and right, but I think the biggest thing is it really impacts the offense the biggest, you know, especially the receivers, the running backs or whatnot. If you're used to catching a pass from Rick Stanzi compared to James Vandenberg, it's just like, oh, okay, you know, I got a nice little thing going with both of these guys. And it's like, okay, Rick throws me the ball more than James did. That's what it comes down to. And I think the biggest thing is just that with Penn State, you got a dual threat and you got a pocket passer, and that's what it comes down to with those two guys. And like one guy makes a mistake and the other one capitalizes, and it's going back and forth. After a while you get tired of it, and it's getting a little late in the season now. I think Joe Pye actually sit there and figure out who is quarterback this week. I just don't see this going farther than this week, actually, just because you need someone that is established. I mean, you can keep going longer and longer in the season, but I don't think it'd be good for the team to just keep going left and right. We're going to get this guy. We need a spark here and there. it's a lot of teams that's actually going through this type of the deal. Ohio State, Alabama, which is kind of weird that they're still going with the two quarterbacks, and of course Penn State. But I think when it comes down to it, Rod Bowden probably end up being on the bench.
And I'm glad you brought up the fact that you noticed a difference, because when on Tuesday you're asking Coach Ferentz about this and you're asking some of the players about it, in particular guys on the defensive side of the ball, you wonder, okay, do they notice anything maybe where there's a clear difference between Bolden and McGlynn? And they almost all the Wattie were saying, no, they don't really notice a whole lot of glaring differences. Now, I'm assuming that that's coach speak, because when the experience I had watching these guys, I see a guy in Bolden that they tend to run the ball actually more with Silas Red when Bolden's in the game, and he'll throw a deep ball, but he doesn't throw as many deep balls. Whereas McGlynn, he's looking for Derek Moy almost every time he's going back to pass. It's just, it's one of those things that it's almost amazing that there is such a discrepancy, yet people almost see it as being still completely even.
Well, I think the biggest deal with the two quarterbacks, like you say, is that Bolden is not going to toss that ball like the other guy will be able to. It's just that his arm, I don't think, is strong enough compared to the other guys. Also, I think Bolden, like you say, he runs the ball a lot or whatnot. It's that he's more of a triple threat, but he's not like a Troy Smith. It's just the biggest thing with him is this. You got to keep contained, and the defensive line know that, the linebackers didn't know that, the DBs would know that, you know, after a while, sit here and like, okay, this receiver is not really doing much, and this quarterback is on a run. But it's going to be a challenge for our defensive line when it comes down to it, especially trying to keep Bolden if he plays or starts to start out with. And then if it goes to the other quarterback, that it'd be pretty much, hey, let's play straight up with our defensive line. But for the most part, Bolden will probably give you more trouble than the other guy just because of his dual threat ability.
Now, last week when we were talking about with the bye week, one comment that you were making at that point in time was you had a little concern because the Penn State game was coming after, as opposed to last week being the Penn State game and this week being the bye. What are some of the concerns or issues that you feel you have with Iowa as they go into this game coming off that week's rest?
I would say the concern, it's not much of a concern to me. It's just the Derby issue, which is a huge concern, you know, with the people outside Hawkeye Nation or whatnot. It's just one of those deals where it's like, okay, these guys had a bye week. Now this guy go out and make a bad decision or whatnot, instead of sitting here just being just like a regular old kid, just sitting back, relaxing, watching some ball and staying at home or whatnot. But things happen. We're going to move forward. But I think the biggest concern was that, other than that, I think Coach Ferentz had the guys ready. Hopefully today's practice and tomorrow's practice, we sharpen some things up and get ready to go to Happy Valley.
Now, you got to experience some highs and lows playing Penn State your sophomore year. You guys went there. Really struggled. You brought that up last week, but your junior and senior year had some very memorable wins. Your junior year, that was when Tyler Sash got the interception, Daryl Clark, and then Daniel Murray made a game-winning field goal. And then your senior year, of course, that was Adrian Claiborne blocking the punt to change that game completely in your favor. What are some of your like personal experiences from playing against Penn State? I know you mentioned tackling Stephon Green, but just the experience of playing in a game like games like that, where the stakes really seem high, and just it almost seems like the pinnacle when you guys are the ones winning.
I was getting ready to say, I seen something on ESPN this past week saying that comparing Camp Randall to the Swamp. I would try to compare it more to Penn State, where Penn State can get real ugly for a visitor if you let the crowd get into it with the Nittany Lions sitting there growling and the fans in there, if it's a whiteout or not. I mean, Penn State can get really ugly for you if you're not prepared. It's pretty cool there, 100,000 fans there. But the biggest thing is just you gotta stay focused, because that environment can get you really fast, and it's a very enjoyable one, but it won't be enjoyable if you're getting beat up on. But my biggest memory was my senior year, actually, when Adrian Claiborne went on and blocked that punt. But it wasn't that actual time. It was actually when we was walking out and in the locker room when they pretty much had everything bordered for us to go through to the locker room and whatnot, and people just calling us all kinds of names and all kinds of stuff. It's fun when you're sitting there just beating up on people, and also just people talking about, oh, you guys ruined our perfect season and all that stuff. That was the greatest part, because the greatest feeling is to go to someone's house and beat them up and go back home. That's a great feeling, and hopefully these guys had that feeling.
Now, the last question I'll have for you here, according to the Vegas lines, and we're not necessarily condoning gambling, but if you want to do that, that's your own free will. Penn State is actually listed as a 4-point favorite. Now, I know in the past, especially while you were playing at Iowa, the whole underdog role is something that Kirk Ferentz seemed to relish. And it's something that he seemed to get you guys motivated with. What are some of your memories just from when you played of being in that situation where maybe you guys weren't necessarily favored to win, but he found a way to maybe inspire you to go out there and play your absolute best and be able to come out on top?
Well, who doesn't like playing an underdog role? I mean, do you think Oklahoma like being a favorite every weekend, week out, the rest of the year, LSU, Alabama? But those teams are teams that sit there and just they build upon their success and everything. But Coach Ferentz and his staff, we love the underdog role. I mean, it's no better feeling to sit there and feel someone sitting there maybe disrespecting you or just not noticing what's going on. People know that Iowa's a solid team in the Big Ten, and especially if as Coach Ferentz stay at helm of this team, they know this is a very dangerous team, a very physical team, and a team that will play some daggone good football on the defensive side. But I think that Coach Ferentz just loves being an underdog. He likes sitting back, and he don't like the spotlight, just like our team. But, you know, once the spotlight come on, hey, we got to show up.
And actually, I do have one quick follow-up for you here. I just thought about this. The last few years, Iowa has had success against Penn State, and one reason some people suggest is, okay, well, Iowa knows what's coming from Penn State. Penn State's very predictable. From your – is that a fair assessment? Or I guess how would you assess why there's been that recent string of success?
I was going to say with that success, it's just one of those deals where, you know, when you got a staff of 13 years together, and you got tape from all those years plus years from the past that you played on some other teams, just trying to figure out, if Penn State is not the same type of team they have been running the ball, if they were sitting there a passing team, you know, either or, they go back to different years and try to figure out what quarterback best fits that description. And Coach Ferentz does a great job at it, especially Norm Parker. I got to give Coach a lot of props just because he's still doing it now these days. But he breaks down film like it's no other. He has his game plan ready. And it's just from a different perspective, it's just like, is Coach O'Keefe ready? That's the biggest thing, you know. But I think another thing deal with success also with the Penn State game is special teams. I know Dan Murray kicked the field goal, but what about that block that we had here at home deep into our end zone or whatnot, and that we pulled off? But it's just one of those deals. The special teams is gonna play a big role, and I think that's gonna be the outcome of the game. Special teams, whoever play well.
All right, I think I've grilled you long enough on this stuff. We'll get right to the pick 'em. By the way, if you haven't submitted your picks this week for this week's HawkeyeDrive.com pick 'em, you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to do so. Just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Just hover over that, and then there's a pick 'em page. Click that. List of 10 games is there. Since I was playing again, we do have the tiebreakers back in effect. Just submit your picks to us at HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Whoever wins will get a prize. And the tiebreaker is having a score with that Iowa-Penn State pick. So without further ado, we'll jump right in. First game on the docket is probably the best game of the weekend. It's the Red River Rivalry. Oklahoma, Texas. Sooners have actually slipped in the polls. They're now third in the country. Texas has moved up to 11th after you correctly picked it, that Texas beat Iowa State last week. Both teams 4-0. Thing I love about this game is that they play it every year in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl, and literally, like, the stadium is split in half. One side is completely crimson and cream for Oklahoma. Other side's completely burnt orange and white for Texas. Atmosphere is great. It should be a good game. The one thing I've always noticed when these two teams play each other is the team that has better talent or more athletic talent and kind of comes in as a better team usually is the one that emerges. And I think that that trend continues here. I see Oklahoma pulling this game out. I think Texas will keep it close. But at the end of the day, I just feel Oklahoma's a better team. They're going to end up winning this game.
I was getting ready to say one thing about this game also is that their actual state fair revolves around this game, which is a great thing. I'm agree with you. I like what Texas is doing. They have a balanced attack, you know, with the run and the pass. Oklahoma is just a talented team. We really haven't heard much from Oklahoma just after the Florida State game just because they haven't really had much competition. But I'm picking OU to take care of business.
Moving along here, Florida suffered its first loss of the season last week to Alabama. Lost John Brantley in the process. They now have a true freshman quarterback starting for them. And, oh, yeah, his first start is going to be on the road against the number one team in the country at LSU. I think Florida will be able to move the ball a little bit more effectively against LSU than they did Alabama. They just couldn't run the ball at all in Alabama. I think Rainey and Demps will both have better games, and they're going to need to in order for Florida to have any chance. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is an ugly situation, and LSU has enough talent on offense as well that I really think not only does LSU win this game, but it could get pretty ugly down there in Death Valley.
Okay, here we go. My upset pick of the week. I really feel that Florida has a chance in this game with the freshman quarterback. Maybe this kid has something different in his side that Brantley doesn't have. I think in a way that Brantley just don't feel comfortable really in Charlie Weiss's system. It's just like, I don't know what type of quarterback Brantley is. I mean, he came as under Urban Meyer, but he looked like a pocket passer. Yeah. And then you got him and Charlie Weiss pro system, and he still doesn't look comfortable. They still running stuff from Urban Meyer. It's just all out of whack. I figure that both teams have played some really good defense with LSU having a better defense, but Florida has better receivers than any team that LSU has played, and I think that's going to be the key to the game for Florida, is to be able to get their running backs out there and be able to have their running backs versus their LSU's linebackers, be able to make those guys have to cover in space. And Chris Rainey is unbelievable. Demps is unbelievable. I feel that Florida can go ahead and take care of business. I don't think they will lose to Alabama and LSU twice in 2 weeks.
Moving along, we got a Pac-12 game that looked really appealing at the beginning of the year, but now maybe not so much. Arizona State is ranked 22nd in the country. Coming off another win against Oregon State, they're now 4-1 and actually 2-0 in Pac-12 play. They're playing a division rival in Utah that is 2-2, but 0-2 in conference play. Just got drilled last week by Washington. And in the process, they lost Jordan Wynn for 2 to 3 weeks with a shoulder injury. This is another game. The one concern I would have with Arizona State is that they play Oregon next week, and you got to worry about them maybe looking ahead. But with that being said, I just feel like this is a game I can't picture the Sun Devils losing. I just think they have too much talent. And the other thing, too, if they do win this game, they pretty much have that division locked up because Oregon, Stanford, and Washington are all in that other division. And Arizona State, I mean, they've already beat USC. USC can't go to a Pac-12 championship game or to a bowl. So there's really nobody else there in the Pac-12 South that can compete with the Sun Devils. So if they win this game, they pretty much have that division on lockdown. I think they get it done up in Salt Lake City on Saturday.
I was getting ready to say, you talk about Oregon. What about Oregon's game against Cal? We don't have that on.
Well, it's because it's a Thursday night game. So, and the pick'em deadline's Friday. That's why.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, Arizona State, like you said, they have this. They have everything written for them if they take care of business this weekend. I just figure that Utah now may be thinking, what did we get ourselves into? But at the same time, hey, it's the first time for everything. I just feel that Utah is going to have their growing pains this year, but they're at home. That's where they get a better chance at beating Arizona State, but it's not going to happen.
So we both agree there on Arizona State. Moving along, Virginia Tech suffered its first loss of the season at Clemson, as you alluded to earlier. They fell to 21st in the polls. They get another home game here and a chance to redeem themselves against Miami, who comes in 2-2. I look at this game, and again, I think Virginia Tech wins for the same reason I picked them last week to win, which is the fact that it's at Lane Stadium, and they're going to have the edge defense and special teams. And the other point, too, is Miami is not Clemson. I mean, Miami has talent, but they're not – they're just not on the same level right now as Clemson is. And this is a game Virginia Tech really needs to win in order to win their division. Because if Miami is able to go in there and win and Virginia Tech falls 0-2 in ACC play, suddenly you got to look at Georgia Tech and think they might be the favorite there in the Coastal Division to play Clemson in the ACC title game. But I think Virginia Tech bounces back and gets it done. I just can't picture them losing two straight games at home, so I'm going with the Hokies.
Well, I was getting ready to say with Clemson, let's not forget Clemson had a losing record last year. And we can say vice versa, Clemson last year. Miami has, I think, better talent than actually Clemson. But it's just Miami is just one of those teams, just like Ohio State this year is like, holy crap, I don't know what team to show up this week. I figure that Al Golden to have Miami show up, but what team will show up? Will he get the fire under those guys' butts to go down to Blacksburg this weekend and show up? But after Virginia Tech took that whooping this past weekend at home, like you say, you got questions. Should I pick Virginia Tech at home? It's just one of those deals. But Clemson has proven that they're a team to be reckoned with. But I know you've seen those fans show up Sunday morning, but I'm going to pick Virginia Tech.
Moving along here with the SEC. And this suddenly became a very interesting game. I'm shocked that it is, but Auburn went into South Carolina, won last week. They climbed up to 15th in the polls, now 4-1. They're actually 2-0 in the SEC at the moment. They're going to Fayetteville to take on an Arkansas team that came from 18 points down at halftime to beat Texas A&M and make us both look foolish last week. But Auburn, it's one of those things that, yeah, they beat South Carolina. I'm still kind of shocked that happened. Because, quite frankly, Auburn's defense isn't really that good, yet they managed to keep Marcus Lattimore in check. I just look at the Arkansas offense, especially you saw in the second half of that game against A&M. Tyler Wilson was able to just get it down the field to all those receivers they got. And with this game being at home, I just can't see Arkansas losing. I don't know if they're necessarily a top-10 team like they are. They come into this game ranked 10th now after beating A&M, but I just think they are a better team than Auburn, and I think that they're able to get it done. And I think this would be a big win for Bobby Petrino should the Hogs get this victory.
I was getting ready to say this. It's kind of hard to not pick either team, but you got to pick someone to win this game and someone has to lose. Well, with Auburn, you know, we figure that they're a tough team. Let's not get it wrong. They're a tough team, but they don't have a defense like they had last year in the past couple of years when they had Quinn Groves or so. And so, but Arkansas, they just doesn't have a defense, period. I don't think they have a defense, but their offense just pretty much take everything out of question because they can just go whenever they feel like it, as we see the last 2 weeks. But I'm going to pick Arkansas at home just because of the home field advantage.
Moving along now, back into the Big 12, Iowa State visits Baylor, who fell to 25th in the polls. Both teams are coming off losses. Iowa State lost to Texas. Baylor lost by 1 point to Kansas State. Neither team really has an impressive defense, but I will say Baylor has a better offense, mainly because of Robert Griffin III. And I'm just going to say this, too. I'm picking Baylor to win this game, by the way, but just to throw this out there, I've heard some people saying after Baylor lost to Kansas State that that's killed his Heisman chances. No. First of all, it's still somewhat early to be discussing it. Second of all, if you watch that game, he didn't really do anything to cost himself. I mean, yes, he had more. He now has more incompletions and he does touchdown passes. I'll give you that. But, I mean, what quarterback doesn't? I mean, that was just a rare feat coming in. And he's still impressed. He still threw five touchdown passes in that game. You know, and I look at Iowa State's defense. I don't see them being able to stop him, especially down there in Waco. So I think Baylor bounces back and gets it done.
I agree with you. I think that beating by Texas to Iowa State has really, really did enough damage to give those guys another hangover. Baylor offense is dynamite. We've seen that Iowa State can actually play, but Texas exploited them last week at home. And as most people would say, Iowa State is who we thought they were, but the biggest thing is Texas. Texas will not sit there and lose two years in a row against Iowa State. So Baylor, I take them at home. Kendall Wright is an amazing guy also, but it seemed like that's the only target that Robert Griffin has. So I think the longer the season gets, Robert Griffin needs to find another receiver. I think that's the biggest deal with them. And like you say, both teams doesn't have the greatest defense.
Yeah, and the other point, too, is Baylor, given the depth in the Big 12 right now, they're still going to be playing all these other teams. So Griffin has a chance to really leave an even bigger impression on people as the season progresses and on the national stage. And if he's able to do that, I mean, right now, I think he's definitely one of the top contenders for the Heisman Trophy at this point, if you are going to discuss it. I don't know if he's the guy that's going to win it, and I don't necessarily think he will win it, but he's definitely in the conversation at this point. I'd be shocked if he doesn't get that invite. Now in the Big Ten, this is a game that's being played under the lights at Ryan Field in Evanston. Northwestern had a 28-10 lead on Illinois, was making both of us look pretty smart there, but then the Illini came back and won the game 38-35. Wildcats have now lost two straight games, and now they're hosting an undefeated Michigan team that just laid a whooping on Minnesota last weekend. This is Michigan's first road game of the season, so it's important to point that out. But at this point in time, I mean, Northwestern's defense struggled against Nathan Shielhouse and A.J. Jenkins. I don't see them being able to bounce back against Denard Robinson and the receivers that he has around him. I mean, Michigan, they have a very dynamic offense. And as they showed last week, it's not just Denard. I mean, granted, they played Minnesota, but still, it's not just him. Like, he is the focal point of their offense, but they have other guys that they've gotten involved. I mean, Vincent Smith, I think, had a rushing touchdown, he threw a touchdown pass, and he caught a touchdown pass last week. So they have that. They have decent receivers that Denard can get the ball to. Dan Persa is supposed to play, but I'm wondering just how effective he's going to be because he had to leave the game last week against Illinois. And, you know, Northwestern, pretty much the one thing they have going for them is that they're at home and that this is Michigan's first road game. But with all that being said, I just don't see the Wolverines losing. I think they have it figured out.
I was getting ready to agree with that. I just thought about it. Northwestern will be playing two night games in a row. But, yes, they're at home. Their defensive backs just not getting the job done, as I see the last couple games. If Denard Robinson can run and throw the ball, it's going to be a nightmare in Evanston. But you can't go against Michigan. You know, the one thing is that we see that Michigan hasn't really been tested at all this year. Notre Dame's a very, very solid team, I figure. But Notre Dame, I think with that, they should never gave up the guts in that game, just like the South Florida game. Notre Dame can easily be have two better wins on their column.
Be undefeated.
Right. And I just figure that it's just a lot of questions still with Michigan. Like you said, it's the first road game, and I'm going to pick Michigan.
Well, we're going to find out how good Michigan is, though, because they are playing four of their next five away from the Big House here. And then they end the season with two straight home games against Nebraska and Ohio State. But they play four of these next five away from home. It's going to be a test. And I think Northwestern will hang with them for a while. But at the end of the day, I agree. I just think Michigan's too talented. And Denard's going to prove to be too much for Northwestern to handle. Very intriguing game in the SEC Saturday night up at Neyland Stadium in Knoxville. Tennessee is 3-1, hosting a Georgia team that's now 1-3 straight after beating Mississippi State pretty soundly. That was one of the games we both did get right last week. I'm really torn on this matchup because I like what Georgia's starting to do now, and I think they have it figured out. But with this game being in Tennessee, I think everything just kind of seems to be in the Vols' favor as far as the intangibles are concerned. And at the end of the day, I think that it will be a very good game. It will be a very close game, but I just see Tennessee coming out on top.
I was going to say, I think personally this game would be the best game of the night. Just because, like you say, the game is at Neyland Stadium. It's two heavyweights fighting against each other, and it's kind of weird not to see either one of these teams actually rank. Georgia's is a team that's just flying under the radar, which I'm happy that the guys got it back together because, you know, it's hard to not see Georgia do well with their used to doing well, battling it out with Florida in the East or whatnot. But I really feel that Georgia can go ahead and take care of business away from home. I like Tennessee's offense, but Georgia should be able to take care of business.
Now in the Big Ten, there's a game Saturday night featuring Ohio State and Nebraska. Both teams are coming off losses. Ohio State lost a very ugly game to Michigan State 10-7. Nebraska just got whooped by Wisconsin up in Madison last week. This was a game that Ohio State thought they were going to have Boom Heron and Devere Posey back. It turns out that there are more issues with those guys, and they're still under suspension for another thing that came up back in the summer. They do get Mike Adams back on the offensive line, which is a good thing for them. Mm-hmm. But Nebraska, with this being their first home game in Big Ten play, and considering that they really just got it taken to them by Russell Wilson in Wisconsin last week on national TV, I feel like the Huskers defense is going to be out to prove something. And you have those guys like Jared Crick, Levante David, and Alfonso Dinar. I just think that Ohio State's going to have a hard time putting up points. And Nebraska will do just enough offensively to emerge victorious. Maybe I don't think it'll be completely ugly, but I'll say Nebraska wins this game by double digits.
I was going to say, both teams just had some ugly losses and got thumped pretty well. It doesn't really show on the score of the Ohio State-Michigan State game, but it was just ugly. As a resident of Ohio, growing up in Ohio, it's just one of those deals. You just sat there and shook your head like, wow, what's going on? This quarter, since when last time we never had a pretty decent quarterback? I mean, Craig Krenzel, he got the job done. He was a smart guy. But Braxton Miller, very interesting.
This is his first road start, by the way.
Well, good luck to him. I was going to say, this Joe – the senior Joe Brosman, man, he can't throw an accurate ball. And
he actually came in the game in the fourth quarter for Miller against Michigan State, which I think surprised me. It surprised everybody. It just Ohio State, they just couldn't move the ball at all.
I was getting ready to say that Joe Brosman, I mean, yes, he can pass. He can pass much better than Braxton, but he just had no accuracy, and, like, he throws the ball in the ground or overhead. It's just, I don't know. I just don't know what to say about Ohio State right now. I know it's been swarming around. Gene Smith need to do something to save his job. That was one thing we talked about this past weekend, but I just figured that it can get real ugly at Ohio State this weekend. It probably can be back Black Sunday maybe here. I know that we talked about Luke Finkel. It's not fair to him in a way to take a team like this with all kinds of messiness. But, I mean, it can get pretty ugly for him also with Buckeye Nation and someone had Gene Smith. But just go back to the game. I really feel that Nebraska actually won this game at home. There's no way that Bo Pelini would sit here and let his alumni I mean, it's good that he's alumni too, Ohio State, to come in and thump them also. But Ohio State just has enough power to sit there and thump Nebraska at home. And I'm sure that Big Red will be ready for those guys to come back home and just send them off to a good game.
And to be fair to Nebraska, too, I should say, yeah, they lost by 31 points to Wisconsin. They played them pretty close for most of that first half. It was right before halftime Wisconsin kind of emerged. And then in the second half, they just didn't look back because Nebraska at that point in time just started turning the ball over. I just don't see Taylor Martinez and Rex Burkhead struggling as much as they did last week. And now finally, Iowa, Penn State. This is the Hawkeyes Big Ten opener. Penn State is 1-0 in Big Ten play already after beating Indiana. It's a 2:30 start here in Iowa, 3:30 in Pennsylvania if you're going to the game or if you just live out on the East Coast. Iowa's won the last three meetings. Chris, I'll give you the forum here and just tell me what kind of goes through your mind. You look at Saturday's game and how you see it unfold.
I look at Saturday's game as one thing that I figured out, that Iowa, comparison to Indiana last week, Iowa has way better receivers. That's our advantage. And also that I think that Marcus Coker will be able to run the ball, but I really feel that if we're going to beat Penn State, we're going to pass the ball because I think that's our strength. And, of course, James Vandenberg wanted to throw the ball more than he wanted to hand off to Marcus Coker or any other freshman guys, or either Jason White. But I figure our defense just have to, you know, thud up and take care and secure tackles because Penn State always was known to have some elusive guys dating back to Chaz from number two for Penn State, Derek Williams, Norwood, Butler. All those guys are pretty elusive. They still have elusive guys in that program. But the biggest thing now is just that, like I said earlier, the key is special teams because this can be a low-scoring game. I feel that it will be a low-scoring game. I just feel that the Hawkeyes will win by at least 10 points.
I'm going to be honest here. I've been really flipping back and forth on this game for a while. You know, coming into the season, I was looking at this game as, okay, this is one that Iowa's probably going to lose. Then recently, Penn State has been dealing with injuries. Iowa seems to have discovered themselves, like you said, offensively, and now it looks like Iowa's a better team. And now you see Penn State's a favorite by 4 points. I'll just start by saying this. I think, to me, I agree that special teams will play a role. I think the biggest key for Iowa is going to be turnovers, because right now Matt McGloin doesn't have any interceptions. Rob Bolden's thrown four, and you also have a running back in Silas Red that I don't know how many fumbles he's had, but he's maybe not quite Ray Graham, but he's close. Mm-hmm. He's a talented running back, and you mentioned Stephon Green earlier. If they are able to get him back into the mix this week, he is back on the team. I think that's going to be one big key for Iowa, is winning the turnover battle, because that has really proven to be a key against Penn State the last few years. And I think the other thing, too, is playing the trenches. And I think this could be a concern because the D-line, it just isn't what it was. I mean, it's gotten better. I think the defense has played better. But Penn State has a decent offensive line, and they have a decent defensive line. You mentioned Devin Still. He's as good a defensive lineman as there might be right now. I don't necessarily see Iowa being able to run the ball as effectively. And I agree. I think they're going to have to air it out. The end of the day, it's hard for me to give a prediction here just because to me, it almost comes down to who the quarterback is for Penn State. Because if it's Bolden, I don't think they have a chance. I think Iowa would win the game comfortably. But if McGloin ends up getting most of the reps,
that's true.
I think Penn State has a better chance.
I was getting ready to say, I really feel that Iowa's biggest advantage is KMM, Kevontae Martin-Manley, just a slot receiver, just because Iowa has two dynamite receivers already with Keenan and Marvin. I mean, it's not – a linebacker is not going to be able to sit there and guard him. I just feel that he's not DJK, but he has very very shining moments like DJK. He can catch those short routes and turn it up here and there. But, I mean, the guy's going to be a playmaker. He's a young guy, but I really feel that Iowa should use him as their advantage in a three-receiver set or whatnot. And let's not forget about our tight ends. Tight ends may play a really key role this week.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up because Ferentz actually said during his press conference Tuesday that right now that's a week-by-week thing with Herman, Derby, and Fedorowicz, who really, I mean, I don't want to say he's disappeared, but that's almost kind of what's happened because Zach Derby's just kind of emerged, and he actually started against Louisiana Monroe. I'll say that I think Iowa will – I'll say Iowa wins 2017. Let's just say the confidence level wouldn't be high on this pick. Let's just say that because I could really see this going either way. I'll give Iowa the benefit of the doubt just because I feel like they've gotten it turned around. But again, it goes back to the thing we also talked about with the bye week. And the last few bye weeks they've had, they've come out rusty. You know, it's not their record's 3-5, so I don't want to necessarily say they've been awful coming off bye weeks, but even last year against Michigan, they trailed 7-0 early in that game before Ricky Stansy, Adam Robinson, DJK just decided to absolutely assault Michigan's defense the way they did on the field. But I'll say 2017. I think it's going to be a much closer game. And really, it comes down to, in my opinion, it does come down to who's out there more for Penn State. Because if it's Bolden, Iowa's proven last year, because Bolden played against Iowa last year, they've proven that they could get to him. You know, and whereas if McGloin's in there, I think you got to worry more about Derek Moy, you know, whether it's Prater or Micah Hyde that's covering him. And you never know. They're capable of throwing a deep ball, as you know, from when you played them a couple of years ago. But yeah, I'll say 2017, but I'll just say this is one of the few times I've really been torn as to how I see this game unfolding. But I'll give Iowa the benefit of the doubt here. It's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Chris, I'd like to thank you again for joining us. If you ever visit HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a free 3-day trial to the site that gives you access to all of our premium content for free. If you take advantage of that trial and decide you like the site, we offer monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. Chris, thank you again. And for Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Stiles, signing off.